And from Ukraine, that was the Patricia Rock Band and Nezdamsya Tobi, I Will Not Give Up. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі на радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння. При мікрофоні Павліна Макворі. Дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there and welcome to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio here on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. I'm Павліна, your host. Thank you so much for joining me. We've got a great program lined up for you. We've got Sylvia along with another recipe for a very hearty soup, which I thought, given our weather these days, it's supposed to be spring, but we're in the dead of winter here on the West Coast, so she's got a recipe that'll certainly warm you up and stick to your ribs. As well, Ukrainian Jewish heritage with an open address to the Jews of Maidan. This actually goes back probably about a month, but it's still very timely. It was written by Vitaly Nachmanovich, and it'll be narrated by our own Volodya Volkov of the Jewish Heritage Museum in Lviv. As well, we have a Rushnichuk story, which is very apropos for March, which is the birth month and actually death month as well, Taras Shevchenko's month in the Ukrainian community. And he's back. Rushnichuk will be giving us a little bit of a taste of what that's all about. As well, special commentary by CBC producer in Toronto by the name of Marichka Milnik, and she posted a personal essay a couple of weeks ago on her Facebook page, which is just something that needs to be shared with the world. And so let's start here on Nash Holis. As well, we have an interview that was recorded last Wednesday on the Nanaimo edition of the show. And on Wednesday, the 26th of February, there was a wonderful project in Ukraine, an initiative of a language swap between East and West, where Lviv citizens spoke Russian and Donetsk citizens in Eastern Ukraine spoke Ukrainian, just to as a show of unity to the world, linguistic, geographic, cultural, and all the rest, just to as a symbolic a show of unity in Ukraine. So we'll talk with one of the organizers and a couple of people on their unique perspective on that. So stay tuned for all of that as well. We'll have our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music, and pretty much topical given what is going on in Ukraine right now. Here is a song by a group called Umagma. The writer and the singer is one half of that duo. His name is Alex Kritov, and this is an original composition which was released very recently and is making the rounds, as getting quite a bit of traction online, and understandably so. Here is Alex Kritov now with Krok.
На снігу печать холодна, дні жнуть, світ стоїть на краю, я за одну яму в серці йду, там, де наші заповідні сни дивляться сни. Де вже так катастрофічно близько та весни. І бачу, як знімається сонце, падає сонце твоїх очах, в твоїх очах. Щастя на бігу, da svi nadjane svoju lepšu suknju i ptiće. Чи як знімається сонце, і паде сонце в твою очах, в твоїх очах.
For the cost of a cup of coffee a day, you can give a destitute family in Ukraine food, hope, and a better life. Please open your heart and share your good fortune. Sponsor a Ukrainian child today. Details at www.heart.ca. That's HART.ca.
Thanks to the foresight and generosity of its donors, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been investing in the future of the Ukrainian-Canadian community for the past 50 years. Since 1963, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been funding initiatives that strengthen our Ukrainian-Canadian identity and enhance our Ukrainian-Canadian cultural heritage. These include fine and performing artists and arts groups, museums, cultural centers, education, as well as authors, journalists, and the Ukrainian-Canadian media, including this program. The foundation strives to become the premier not-for-profit foundation in a Canada which acknowledges the Ukrainian-Canadian community as a fundamental component of Canadian society. Nash Holis listeners are encouraged to support this vision through continued donations into the future. To apply for grants, make a donation, or for more information, contact the Shevchenko Foundation at 204-944-9128, toll-free 1-866-524-5314, or visit shevchenkofoundation.com.
And now, Ukrainian Food Flair with Sylvia Molnar. Tips for Ukrainian cooking.
Hello. It seems more than ever people are trying to eat healthier. They are looking for foods that provide lots of nutrition, plenty of fiber, and few calories. Here's a Ukrainian soup that fits the bill. It's absolutely delicious. Easy to make. Very nutritious, economical, and freezes well, too. Get your pens ready for sauerkraut soup with buckwheat, or kapusniak, which is a term applied to any type of soup made with sauerkraut or its juice. To Ukrainian tastes, kapusniak is second to borscht in popularity. It contains a favorite Ukrainian characteristic, tartness. You'll need the following: 2 tablespoons olive oil, 2 large onions chopped, 4 cups lean meat stock, 1 pound sauerkraut rinsed in cold water and squeezed if you prefer a milder taste, 1 teaspoon ground pepper, or to taste, and 2 cups cooked buckwheat. Simply heat the oil in a heavy pot, cook the chopped onions until translucent, add the stock, sauerkraut, salt, and pepper. Bring soup to a boil and simmer for half an hour. Add the cooked buckwheat, taste, and adjust for more pepper or salt, if desired. For cooking buckwheat, simply bring 3 cups of water to a boil, add half a teaspoon salt, and stir in 1 cup buckwheat. Bring to a boil again, cover, turn down the heat, and simmer for 30 minutes. This makes 4 cups. Now that's easy. Try it. It's Ukrainian.
Thanks, Sylvia, for sharing your Ukrainian culinary expertise on Ukrainian Food Flair here on Nash Holis Ukrainian Roots Radio.
Shena from Montreal, from their CD Postishka Khmeri, Along Paths of a Dream, and that was Ukraino, Song for Ukraine. There are many songs for Ukraine, past and present, during troubled times of war, as we have now. Recently, there have been many on the Maidan. You've heard many here on Sholos in the past few months, but one recently really hit home. It was by Sofia Fedeno. It's an original composition, of course, and it was first recorded and aired just a few weeks ago, and it is called Aya Zhive. And I'm going to read the lyrics to you, because if you don't understand Ukrainian, you may get the sentiment, but you won't get it all. So here are the words translated in English. And it is, by the way, on YouTube. And if you go to YouTube and search for I Am Alive by Sofia Fedina, you'll be able to see the video, watch her recording it and singing it. And also you will be able to read the lyrics in English. And here they are. I am alive, mommy, I am alive, despite they shoot at us so dishonorably. For them, their own people are the enemies. If I am murdered, I know for what. I know, mom, how it hurts you. This is my impulsive nature. But don't cry. Let our enemies cry from their own weakness. But I am alive, dear mommy, I am alive, because the truth is on our side. They cannot defeat us. The only regret is that our enemies are sicking our brothers in blood upon us. I am alive, mommy, I am alive, and do not ask if I am afraid. Let our enemies be afraid. You pray, and I'll keep on fighting. Sophia Fedina.
А я живий, матусенько, живий, хоч вже по нас безчесно так стріляють, для них вже свій народ то вороги. Якщо ж загину, то за що я знаю? Для них вже свій народ то вороги. Якщо ж загину, то за що я знаю? Я знаю, мамо, як тобі болить ота моя нестримна вдача. Але не плач, хай наші вороги від немочі своєї гірко плачуть. Але не плач, хай наші вороги від немочі своєї гірко плачуть. А я живий, матусенько, живий, бо за нами правда, нас вже не здолати. От тільки жаль, що наші вороги скують на нас мого по крові брата. От тільки жаль, що наші вороги скують на нас мого по крові брата. Я живий, матусенько, живий, і не питай, чи я боюся. Нехай бояться наші вороги, а ти молись, я ж, матінко, борюся. Нехай бояться наші вороги, а ти молись, я ж, матінко, борюся. Нехай бояться наші вороги, а ти молись, я ж, матінко, борюся.
This is Stefan Andrusiak from Rushnechok, and you're listening to Nash Holos with host Paulette McQuarrie. Дорогі слухачі, від всіх наших членів оркестри Рушничок, великий привіт вам! Ви слухаєте радіопередачу «Наш голос».
Today, a few words about one of Рушничок's shortest songs. But the sparse, powerful words are part of the greatest legacy Ukrainians have today, for those words were written by poet-artist Taras Shevchenko, a man who rose above the economic, political, and personal wreckage of his time to influence the consciousness of an entire nation. A genius who popularized and gave a unique standing to the Ukrainian language, because to read his wildly popular poems, you had to read them in Ukrainian. Shevchenko was born into serfdom. By age 11, he was orphaned. His art eventually would buy him his freedom, but brave words would put him back into chains repeatedly. Today in Ukraine and across the world, the Ukrainian language is again under some threat, this time from erosion. 40 years ago in Montreal, my friend and bandmate Eugeno Sidach put a simple, memorable melody to Shevchenko's towering words. Учіться, брати мої. They state, learn well, think, read, learn what is foreign to you, but don't forsake your own. for those who forget what their mother taught them will answer to God. I believe that Yuhan's melody could become an easy-to-remember anthem when we come to celebrate the bicentennial of Taras Shevchenko's birth, sing it at schools and camps and concerts, but most of all, remember the orphan who took on giants and who saved a language. Here we are with Rushnichok, Volume 1, Ukrainian Poet Number 1. The song is called Uchitesya, Brate Moyi. Learn well, everyone.
Учитеся, брати мої, думайте, читайте, і чужого навчайте, свого не цурайте, і чужого навчайте, свого не цурайте. Бог то матір забуває, того Бог карає. Чужі люди цураються, хату не пускають. Чужі люди цураються, хату не пускають.
Юрба проти влади. Чи є щось страшніше? Йдуть люди на площу, бо нікуди більше. І беркут напроти в шоломах з кийками. Манкурти сучасні, ні тата, ні мами. Солдате, солдате, не бий свого брата, згадай свого батька, поглянь же на матір, життя положили, та визнати мушу, усе в них украли, ще й плюнули в душу, за кого ти вийшов. Кого ти борониш, вони не є люди, а ти все їм годиш. Отямся, солдате, задуматись треба, де люди, де нелюдь, де прірва, де небо. Солдате, солдате, не бий свого брата, згадай свого батька, поглянь же на матір, життя положили, та визнати мушу, усе в них украли, і пам'ять, і душу. Солдате, солдате, не бий свого брата, згадай свого батька, поглянь же на матір, життя положили, та визнати мушу, усе в них украли, ще й плюнули в душу.
From the Maidan, a song called Soldate, Soldier. Ви слухаєте українську радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння на багатомовній радіостанції CHMB AM1320 у місті Ванкувері.
And now, Ukrainian Jewish Heritage, in cooperation with the Jewish Heritage Museum in Lviv, Ukraine. This special «Наш голос» feature is brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative based in Toronto, Ontario.
Добрий день! This is Volodymyr Valkov at the Faina Petchakova Scientific Center for Judaica and Jewish Art in Lviv, Ukraine. Open address to the Jews of the world. Over the last month, there had been a total of 3 attacks on worshippers attending a Podil synagogue in Kyiv. 2 were unsuccessful, One left its victim, a yeshiva student, wounded. The modus operandi and the circumstances leave us no doubt as to who is the culprit. It is certainly not a spontaneous upsurge of aggression from Maidan's anti-Semites, as there is a far closer synagogue in the very center of Kyiv. Besides, only a madman could try to plan something like this consciously in the middle of Maidan today, as this would mean throwing away any hope for help from the West with their own hands. But the other side. First of all, the act has an air of cheek and complete impunity about it. The worshippers themselves caught an observer who had been drawing the roots of yeshiva students to and from the synagogue. He went to the police quite calmly and was never seen or heard from again. Second, the police itself, which hasn't found anyone and seems to not have even started looking. It is a familiar scene from Kyiv today. Hired thugs, protected by the agents of law enforcement, burn cars, attack passers-by, and disappear into the night. Their expectations are simple. Either the Jews believe that they have become victims of the Bandera followers and call for a stop to the Maidan outrage, or the Jews understand that they were chosen by the government for a scare and call for a stop even louder, afraid of things becoming worse. We have long lived on this land. The Jewish communities of Crimea have existed for over 2,000 years. Kyiv was first mentioned in a letter written in Hebrew, but our modern history in Ukrainian lands began only 500 years ago. It had been a very diverse history, great and insignificant, happy and frightening. The Golden Age and Hasidic Judaism, Zionism and Haskalah, pogroms and the Holocaust, communism and the fight against cosmopolites. This is all part of our history here. And it always happened that we have always lived side by side with Ukrainians, but very rarely with them. This was due to their land belonging to anyone but them. Lithuania and Poland, Austria and Hungary, Romania and Czechoslovakia, and the USSR, and the Third Reich. Empires and republics, monarchies and tyrannies, they had all been united in one thing, that the people of this land must remain silent and obedient. And we had followed our natural instinct of self-preservation and tried to always be on the side of the strong, on the side of the government, and that meant never on the side of the Ukrainians. However, that also meant that whenever they attempted to finally break free of the foreign yoke, we became one of the first channels for instinctual hatred or targeted propaganda. Then we once again asked for help and protection from the current government, and the cycle repeated itself. Perhaps if at least one Ukrainian attempt to achieve independence turned out differently, we would have had a different relationship. The last attempt, made a little over 20 years ago, has seemingly succeeded. The last empire of Europe broke into pieces, and on its remnants arose or were restored new independent states, including Ukraine. This entire time the young country sought its own way and its own place in the family of free peoples. And it has been a difficult search. The Baltic peoples were lucky. They had been accepted into the European family right away. Civil wars were imposed on the Moldavians and the Georgians, and their countries broke apart. The Ukrainians demonstrated miracles of composure and stamina, solving ever more complicated political crises with no blood spilled. But today, the time of reckoning has come. The forces of imperial recoup outside and inside Ukraine have openly placed their stakes into the hands of the most odious politician of the pro-Soviet camp, who combines a petty criminal past, a lack of schooling, and a provincial outlook. Over less than 3 years of his rule, he managed to become insanely rich and make a host of enemies, all while destroying Ukraine's national economy and its hope of integrating into Europe. 2 months ago, the citizens of Ukraine, who have snatched a few breaths of the air of freedom over the last 20 years, went out to a square with one demand: to stop the country from becoming a dictatorship and to return hope for a brighter future to its people. Since then, they have been standing at Kyiv's Maidan and many other squares all over the country. It is not just Ukrainians who are making the stand, but also Russians, Armenians, Belarusians, Crimean Tatars. And the Jews are standing as well. The government threw special police forces and the internal military at them, hired thugs and frightened government employees, all those who still carry within them the Soviet-bred indifference to their own future and a fear to lose the piece of stale bread that they are fed with by the almighty bureaucrat. Today, our word means much for these people and for the entire world. We received the privilege to speak out and be heard through the blood and ashes of the Holocaust. Unfortunately, today many of us are once again trying to either seize profit for themselves from the situation or to simply wait it out. That has already happened more than once in our history. But today it is time to remember that our people received their right to immortality 3,500 years ago, not just by promising to fulfill God's commandments, but to bring knowledge of Him to all peoples. Today, 45 million people from a country that had been watered with our own blood too ask only for justice and mercy. They ask for two things which God grounded this world upon. Do we truly have the right to deny them that? Vitaly Nachmanovich, historian, Kyiv.
Join us again next week for another episode of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative. On the line with me now are Volodya Volkov, and Volodya is with the Jewish Heritage Museum in Lviv. Volodya, welcome. Vitayu.
Hi, Volodya. Vitayu.
And we also have on the line from Georgia in the United States, William Risch. And welcome, William.
Hello. Thank you.
Now, you two have not met, and I thought it would be a not bad idea to connect you, because Volodya is in Lviv, and you, William, it was through you that I found out about this incredible project that's going on in Ukraine today between, well, I guess it's over now because it's late there, but it was Lviv. In Lviv, they were speaking Russian, and Donetsk, they were speaking Ukrainian. As
right.
Volodya, were you aware of this in Lviv?
I was. I heard about this as I was going to work in the tram, and I heard about two people behind me speaking about it.
And did you? So did you hear a lot of people speaking Russian in Lviv today?
Yeah, I heard people here and there. You know, different groups of people around the city speaking Russian, and they were having a lot of fun.
So, William, what was the feedback that you heard?
Well, from Donetsk, I did hear a very encouraging sign from one writer, one historian, who said that Lviv's initiative really improved moods today in Donetsk. And there were some mixed reviews in response to that remark. Another friend said, well, I've heard all these aggressive comments lately. I hope things get better. And she had a little bit of skepticism about that. But I think it is very significant, at least to make the announcement, to make the initiative. Honestly, I mean, with any language, you know, on a daily basis, you'll speak the one that you're most comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
So for Volodya and anyone in Lviv, if they, you know, started speaking in Ukrainian, I wouldn't say that would be a great tragedy. But mm-hmm. I think the fact is that the public gesture has been made, and there's been a response from Donetsk, where people from Donetsk, activists there, are saying that we, out here in eastern and southern Ukraine, we should demonstrate and speak in Ukrainian in public places. And, you know, that's a very dicey thing to do sometimes in the east, because I know that Donetsk is primarily a Russian-speaking city. I was there from January the 7th until roughly around the 17th, so I spent 10 days there. And, you know, it is primarily Russian-speaking, although it is very interesting because you do have Ukrainian-speaking pockets in Donetsk, and the same can be said for Kharkiv, which I was also at for a few days then.
In our studio, one of our co-hosts is Tatiana Haste, and she is originally from eastern Ukraine, from Kharkiv.
No,
from Kiev.
Yes, I'm from Kiev, but actually I was born in Dnipropetrovsk region. So, yeah, I'm from the eastern part of Ukraine. Yeah, I was amazed with this. It's kind of flash mob with this project. I was just amazed. And I know and I heard from other people, at least on line. I don't know how it went, this project, how well it was supported, or how many people started doing following this initiative. But I know that many people were saying that they, through these 3 months, and especially through this a few weeks events, they feel like they are awake, and they want to speak. They want to speak Ukrainian, those Russian-speaking people. I didn't hear anything from the Ukrainian-speaking people, but I like this initiative, and I know that was originated in Lviv, and that was great. Yeah.
So there you have an expat from that part of the world, and this whole idea that there is this linguistic split, this East-West split, seems to be disappearing.
It's definitely on people's minds, and I think that's what was so surprising with Lviv, because the people who initiated this effort to speak in Russian, they included members of the Lviv intelligentsia, including writers and activists who have traditionally been, you know, associated with this more nationalist city, mm-hmm. where the Ukrainian language comes first, and yet these people mm-hmm. are making a step in the direction of Russian because, as they said in their appeal, which was, I believe was made yesterday, that we've seen so many people die on the streets of Kiev from different nationalities, and we don't want the opportunity to be lost to bring the country together, to start a new regime, to change the system fundamentally. And if there's some sort of common language, some sort of common discourse is created, that would be wonderful, because, you know, the one thing that happens in the media and amongst popular perceptions in the east and south of Ukraine is that the Maidan protest movement was and is a Western Ukrainian Lviv movement. In fact, when there were demonstrations in Kharkiv on Sunday, I heard in the counter demonstration people telling the journalists, you people need to go back to Western Ukraine. And yet they were talking about people who were demonstrating who were from that town, from Kharkiv.
Yeah.
So that perception is just there.
Yeah.
It's amongst the police. I was there in Kiev on the 19th of January, and the policemen were like, well, you know, you're all from Lviv, or, well, a lot of you are, and then he started to back away from that generalization. But, I mean, that perception is there, that this is some sort of a nationalist phenomenon from Lviv in Western Ukraine. It's not an all-Ukrainian phenomenon that involves a variety of issues, a variety of political parties, a variety of civic groups, a variety of people that, you know, it's a very amorphous thing, this Maidan protest movement. And, and unfortunately, you know, there have been people who have simplified it in the media in Ukraine, and I would argue in the West as well.
Yeah,
and definitely in Russia.
Right, right. And here on the line is somebody in that beleaguered city, Lviv, Volodya.
Yes, and I thank you very much for all the comments. And I want to confirm that this initiative is great. It's a unifying initiative. It's great for our country, and it's the divide that we have between the West and the East is more political. And you know, there have always been people in the east of Ukraine, in small towns and villages, that are Ukrainian speaking. You know, if you move out of the bigger cities, you meet people who speak Ukrainian, and so it's the language has always been there. But because of, you know, the history history, it has changed. Today I also saw on the news a mayor of Donetsk was speaking Ukrainian because of this initiative.
Wow.
He said he enjoyed it, and I was very happy to see that, and basically it was a good counterbalance to the tragedy that we are all still feeling mm-hmm. here in Lviv, in Ukraine. We're still, we have a mood of mourning and tragedy and loss for the victims. But this initiative has, you know, just brought some, you know, a portion of sort of happiness into all of this.
And there as well other divisions that were, you know, a project we've been working on, Volodya, that's, you know, artificial divisions has been between Ukrainians and Jews. And obviously there is no division there is there. And you work at the Jewish Heritage Museum,
exactly.
So you would know.
It's primarily artificial factors that were imposed on Ukraine and Ukrainian culture to basically split the two parts of the country apart. They have also, and it's not just affecting, you know, intra or inter-Ukrainian relations, also affecting international relations or inter-ethnic relations between communities of different nationalities within Ukraine. So it's always, there are those influences, those artificial factors that want to create arguments between, let's say, Ukrainian and Jewish communities or Ukrainian and Russian communities within Ukraine.
Right, right. And what you're doing is absolutely wonderful in Ukraine. I think you're setting an example for other revolutionary areas, and Venezuela seem to be going through exactly the same processes as what you've just gone through, and I think they're taking a lot of inspiration from you. So I don't know if congratulations is the right word. Probably it may be premature. You've got a lot of rebuilding to do, but we are just in awe of you people. And proud to have Ukrainian roots here in Canada, that's for sure. So thank you so much, Volodya Volkov, with the Jewish Heritage Museum in Lviv, and William Risch, the Associate Professor of History at Georgia College and the author of The Ukrainian West, Culture and the Fate of Empire in Soviet Lviv. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us. If you're a regular listener to Nash Holos, you, of course, are following very closely the events of Maidan. Perhaps you even felt you have a sense of solidarity, and perhaps you even wanted to physically be there. At any rate, you wanted to spiritually, emotionally, mentally be with the people on Maidan. And no doubt you have non-Ukrainian friends who can't understand. Why? Why are you so obsessed with what's going on in Ukraine? Why are you so obsessed with your Ukrainian culture? I know I do. And Marichka Melnik, who is a producer in Toronto at CBC, summed it up very, very clearly. She pretty much, when I read this essay, I felt that she was speaking for me. You may feel the same way. Here she is now, Marichka Melnik, with her commentary about why she would fight on Maidan.
Last week, when the violence first erupted in Kyiv's Maidan and lit the city on fire, CBC Radio's program The Current spoke with someone on Maidan about the violence. As the guest described the chaos, host Anna Maria Tremonti twice broke in to ask, "People are still coming to the square? They're not running away?" You could hear the incredulity, even through her professional, measured voice. For my part, however, I reacted by yelling at the radio, "Of course they're coming! I'd be coming there from here if I could." I've since given that response a lot of thought, because so many people seemed surprised when I said it. But I really meant it. I wanted to be there in the soot, the smoke, the dirt, and the blood. Oh, it would have been scary, that's certain. Petrifying. I had occasion to be alarmed when I was at Maidan during peaceful days in January, when even a relatively mild threat of riot police coming ratcheted up the tension behind the barricades to heart-pounding levels. I was not glib about going into the war zone it went on to become. So why would I want to be one of those running to a burning shooting gallery of a square? I really had to ask myself, and I think finally realized it that week. My fellow Ukes will know how we North American-born kids grew up during the Cold War, taught that we should want to rescue and defend Ukraine's independence. We sang the anthem with its lyrics about laying down our souls and lives for our freedom. But then the Soviet regime collapsed. Ukraine got that long-coveted independence. And even political unrest that led to the Orange Revolution in 2004 enacted change peacefully. We weren't going to have to take steps and fulfill that wish for Ukrainian freedom after all. Then this happened. And all of a sudden, the protesters were living the lines of the song, acting out what we had promised we'd do while growing up safe in the West. Sure, we are loyal Canadians or Americans by birth, but by heritage, we were also raised invested in Ukraine and felt a bond and kind of ownership. We've always wanted freedom for Ukraine as much as Ukrainians do. And yet, we've never really had to do anything this extreme to protect or defend it, or be willing to go as far as the Ukrainians there do. No one really expects us to, not even the Ukrainians. And by good fortune of birth, most of us have never had to consider whether we'd really be able to risk laying our lives down for the cause, the idea, or the hope of a change. It's almost like a form of survivor guilt. I wanted to go join Maidan because these people were fighting for something I grew up wanting for them, and for me, and for my own cultural pride. Something I got for free in Canada without second thought, and never had to demand or fight for. Why are those in Maidan the only ones who should pay for something we all hold dear? What's my role in pursuing what I wish to see? Don't I owe the quest for freedom for a country I have a stake in something from myself? If they, ordinary people just like me, not soldiers, could put their bodies and lives on the front line, shouldn't I? Can I really just hope we win true democracy on the backs of people there with no risk or investment of my own? Sometimes people who hear me speak this way ask, "Do you have family there?" I find myself impatient with that question, waving it off. Yes, I do. I don't know them well, but that's not the point. I don't need to know anyone personally in Ukraine to care this much about what happens to it. I'm not aching for fear of individuals I know. I'm feeling for all of them, the people I passed on the streets, who could so easily have been me if my family had had to stay and I'd grown up in Ukraine. It is hard to bear the knowledge that I might get to see and enjoy a Ukraine we all imagined and hoped for because others paid a price I was never even asked to. I've had trouble not offering my share and not stepping into the same risk and terror they faced daily when it felt like they were taking those bullets and blasts for all of us. It felt hard and wrong and unfair somehow, and so I just wished I could go to be one of them, if only to pass bricks, donate blood, ferry the injured to medical aid, do something remotely as real, tangible, and effective as they did every hour, under constant threat of injury and death. Until that dramatic historic week in Kyiv, the phrase Heroyam Slava, glory to the heroes, was just rhetoric, an old nationalist phrase, a password that could get you in the door at the Kriyuka underground bar in Lviv. But now, as people I'd met and passed in the streets of Maidan 6 weeks ago came under fire and stayed anyway and kept coming and bled, I watched in awe and understand what heroism really means. And today, I feel a deep humility when we praise them. Their courage has been tested to the limit. I still want to go to Maidan so I can join them in their efforts to make a new and better Ukraine, stand with them as best I can, and hopefully be worthy of their sacrifices.
Marichka Milnik is producer of Here and Now at CBC Radio 1 in Toronto. You can follow her on Twitter, at Marichka. Here's what's coming up this week in Vancouver's Ukrainian community. On Wednesdays, catch Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio broadcasting live from Nanaimo to north and central Vancouver Island, the Gulf Islands, the Sunshine Coast, northwest Washington State, and greater Vancouver. In our new two-hour time slot, 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Pacific Time, Wednesdays on CHLY Radio Malaspina, 101.7 FM on the radio dial and streaming online at chly.ca. You can get the links to the podcast for both the Nanaimo and this Vancouver edition at www.nashholos.com. On Monday, tomorrow until Thursday, a book of condolences for the families of Ukrainian victims and injured protesters will be open for signing from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Consulate of Ukraine, 807-938 Howe Street in Vancouver. For information, call them at 604-331-2505. On Friday, a pierogi supper at the Holy Trinity Ukrainian Orthodox Center, 154 East 10th Avenue in Vancouver. Doors open from 5 to 8 p.m. For more information, call 604-876-4747 or visit uocvancouver.com. On Saturday, Spring into Spring with a fashion show and fundraiser for Camp Kolomeka, featuring local models sporting designs by Peter Nygaard, Bianca Nygaard, Allison Daly, Tanjay Aliyah, and others. At the Holy Trinity Ukrainian Orthodox Auditorium, 154 East 10th Avenue in Vancouver, doors open at 1:30. Showtime is 2 p.m. and an opportunity to purchase clothing at 3. Refreshments will be served. It's hosted by the Ukrainian Women's Association of Canada, Lesia Ukrainka branch. Admission is just $12. Proceeds to support Ukrainian Children's Camp Kolomeka. Please RSVP by email to Lydia at lydiah@shaw.ca if you're attending. And don't forget, next weekend we start daylight savings time, so remember to spring forward and set your clocks ahead 1 hour at 2 a.m. on Sunday. Contact TV airs on multicultural channel Omni 1 and on Channel 8 on Shaw Cable Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. with a repeat broadcast the following Monday at noon. If you have announcements or story ideas you'd like aired on Contact, please email them at studio@contact.ca. That's studio@kontakt.ca. And at 5 p.m. Sunday evening, slip your radio dial right back here to AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver and join me for another hour of fun here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. In between broadcasts, you'll find upcoming events, program information, audio archives, podcast feeds, and much more at www.nashholos.com. Ну, ми вже скінчили нашу програму, вже час додому і сказати до побачення, але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Є і такі на світі дурні, як думають, що вони розумні. And our proverb of the week translates as, fools always think they are wise. Well, that just about wraps up our program here on Nash Holos for another week. To take us to the end of our show, the Playboys from Edmonton and a traditional Ukrainian folk song, the Woodcutter's Dance, the Arkan. I'm Pavlina on behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and AM 1320. Thanks so much for listening and Dobranich!